Stan Deo from standeo.com is our guest this hour. Folks, go to his website, bookmark it. You can check out his latest and upcoming radio appearances, as well as information, Holly's book, Dare to Prepare, and her latest book you have down there, Prophetic Perils, as well as Stan's works, some of his lectures and other content, as well as what he's going to talk about here on the Hagman and Hagman Report each Tuesday night in hour number 3 on the show images section of his website. Stan, it's great to have you back on the show.
Good to be back.
How's your week?
Got a few things to talk about. Hey, you know, Holly's doing that show tonight, or early in the morning between, 1 and 3 Mountain Standard Time with Coast tonight.
Okay.
It's fantastic. Holly's
Coast
Dale.
To Coast.
That's right. And, of course, next week she'll be on with us in your stead.
Is she going on the hour before me?
Well, it's open to you. Yeah, yes, I... however you want to do it, let's rock. Let's bring her on if she's okay with this. The hour before you next week,
yeah.
I believe. Okay.
And then I'll do the normal one there.
Yeah.
We can have question
kind of
time
team.
On both of them.
Yeah. Let's do that. See, folks, we aim to please. That'll be fun.
And we're not
yeah.
from the government.
We're here to help.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. Yeah. You've got some interesting stories up there. We've been really. Wait a second. I got to go back and revisit what you said. Holly tonight on Coast to Coast.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, she's been cramming for several days, kind of get all of her facts straight and try to figure out how to answer a zillion questions that might come out of the audience or out of George. When
sure.
you have a book that big, you got to, you know, it's encyclopedic. It's so big that she's.
Yeah.
Running through it all, just refreshing, because it's been a year and a half in the writing. So,
well,
she's up
this
here
is,
at the moment doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, this is one that here on the East Coast, I'm going to have to stay up for. It's going to be late, of course, but I can do it. I'm a big boy.
You might as well get up early instead of stay up late.
That's an even better idea.
Yeah,
that's
works
even,
for
yeah,
me.
I like that. Yes, sir. All right.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we've... sorry, go on.
Go on. No. So, folks, next week, Holly Dale preceding Stan Dale in a tag team, husband and wife, Prophetic Perils, and then Stan Dale. Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be great. All right. So go ahead, Stan.
Okay. Relating to her book, you know, she was just doing some review, and she was telling me about how many of these great floods we're having in the States here. You know, the 1-in-1,000-year floods. We've had,
yeah.
I think she said something like 11 or 12 of them. And this year alone, we've had 4, counting the one just happening now, still happening in Louisiana. We've had 4 in this year that were 1-in-1,000-year floods. So we've got 4,000 years worth of floods that have happened here in the United States in 2016. So something's wrong.
That's incredible.
I mean, this is massive.
Yeah, it is. And I just saw that today. They were talking about the 1-in-1,000-year historic flooding in Louisiana. 30,000 people evacuated, 8 dead. Just the pictures from there are... and you read and watching that storm. But did they classify that as any kind of tropical cyclone, depression, storm, or otherwise? Because that just sat over Louisiana and continued in rotation and gaining steam as it sat there as of last week.
Well, you know, in the picture next to that on my show images page, which is down about 4 rows down the middle, I have a latest photo taken by a Chinese girl named Phoebe Pan of a massive sprite, lightning sprite. And if you click on that, it'll turn it right side up so you can see it and expand it a bit. This was taken 3 days ago, and she got a picture of a lightning strike, not from a cloud to the ground or ground to the cloud or between clouds. This is a lightning strike going up into the upper atmosphere straight out. Now, we know about sprites. We've seen them, you know, but this is what's called a red sprite. You'll see the fingers over the red at the top of it. But this is a dirty, big lightning bolt. To kind of give you an idea... go over to the next frame to the left there, and you can see how long lightning strikes are from normal clouds to ground. A And then you look at these sprites and see how many kilometers or miles they go up into the upper atmosphere, up to the ionosphere. This is huge. And to see this many and be able to photograph them tells us that there's more storm activity. And this is weird because we're having what's supposed to be the slowdown period in the sun. You know, not so many sunspots. In fact, some days are sunspot free. But the heat is coming not only to us but all the planets, like we talked about last week. And heat is what drives these, you know, tremendous thunderstorms and hurricanes and stuff like that, tornadoes. So something to keep an eye on. This stuff over Louisiana is a direct result of increased storm activity over areas that it didn't normally do.
And Stan, if you get a chance, you know that wind map that we look at. If you look over the Arctic, there is there's what are some calling a great Arctic cyclone. It looks like a big hurricane over the North Pole, and I don't know what impact. And apparently, the pressure is very low up there. And this is a story I just came across a few minutes ago. But it basically says that this is on par with the central pressure you might find in a moderate-sized Category 2 hurricane. And they say such lows are a common feature of Arctic climate, but rarely gain such intensity in the middle of summer. So it's a great Arctic cyclone.
Yeah, I see it. The winds are in the center are only about 5 miles an hour, and reaching out a few hundred miles, they're only about 28 miles an hour. So it's not like a hurricane yet. But, I do see what you're talking about. There's one probably just as active, about the same figures, off the coast of the Aleutians, heading toward inland toward Alaska. If you look at that map, that Earth Null School map thing.
Okay.
Let me just check the South Pole and see what's happening down there. Well, there's some stuff happening in the South Pole too. Probably a lot busier with there than the North Pole. I think that's probably because you got a central landmass there at the Antarctic and ocean around it, which lets the air flows be uninterrupted. But if you look up at the North Pole, which we're just looking at, you'll see that these are lower atmospheric wind patterns, which are perturbed, or perturbed, I guess is the best word to use, by the land masses of Russia, United States, Greenland. And that's why these things form around the coast of these areas, is because they're hitting land masses, which bounce them back out into the ocean. Whereas on the Antarctic, if you look at that, they have a much clearer path. And you can see they run longer and do many more little vortices. At the moment, I can see 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 vortices at the South Pole. Anyway, that's that.
Interesting.
It may be certainly unseasonal. Where is that? That's over. Oh yeah, Indonesia. I think right now it's just the major storms over the United States over the landmass that are standing out. This 1 in 1,000 type thing. I mean, that's either they got to change their statistical models or. We got to get used to it or something. This is terrible. Yeah. Okay. Now, other things that are happening. Kim, Earthquake Kim, that talks to us and emails us. She's been shooting me stuff on volcanic activity around the planet, and there's an interesting one she sent me about the magma fires in kind of Southeast Africa. The fire is coming up out of the ground in an area, and it's magma, from volcanic activity, but not a volcano. It's magma, hot magma, in a place called Limpopo. For what it's worth. Anyway, I looked at where this stuff is happening, where it's oozing up out of the ground and catching the turf, the grass on fire, and it's part of a fracture zone that runs probably from there. In an arc up through almost to the Great East African Rift. So it may be that we're seeing you know, more stress on the surface of the Earth. I think it's slightly expanding, which explains a lot of the sinkholes we're seeing. And that would be pulling this apart. But we know that East Africa has always had a lot of magma close to the surface. And, you know, it's poured out before and made ridges and mountains. And this may be part of the mountain building process starting again as the planet expands. You know, we still argue with, you know, the mainstream scientists about plate tectonic drift, continental drift, versus catastrophic, you know, expansion of the planet. And ours works better, explaining our theory works better, explaining why we get these massive eruptions of magma along the fissures between, say, Europe and North America and you know, in East Africa. And you don't see so much of that in the Pacific, but the expansion certainly is happening in the Atlantic, north and south. And it was an expansion between the land masses when they were all together. Not 100 million years ago, but you know, thousands of years ago. Anyway, that's a drum I beat too often, I guess, but I get excited about that. Kim also sent me.
Rightfully so. I mean, it's an interesting sign of the times, too. I mean, obviously. Biblical sign of the times. Am I right in that? I mean, I
oh, yeah. I just read Holly's book, Prophetic Perils.
There you go. Yeah. And I think it's something we all should be paying attention to. So that's just me. But go ahead.
It is. Now, Kim sent me another notice about Popocatépetl down in Mexico, a volcano down there. And in the third row down the middle, if you want to click on that in the middle, it'll take you to the news article on it saying it's erupted four times in under 24 hours. Now, they have had it for months now. They've had Popo on a level 2 alert, which is one level below 3, and 3 is the worst eruption in progress. And at level 2, they're told to stand by for instructions to evacuate. And imagine being, like, what are we in August, 7-8 months worth of standing ready to evacuate should the authorities say we're going to lose, you know, people and houses because it's going to erupt and throw heavy stones out at you. But it certainly is an impressive video that you can click onto that site and roll down a bit. You'll see a picture of Popo over there. It's only about, I don't know, 16, 18 seconds, something like that. And it's really impressive to see that stuff shooting up. And if you were living in Mexico City, that close to this, you'd look up during your lunch break and say, wow, I mean, this is not time-lapse photography. This is happening at that speed. And it does spew out a rather interesting cloud. If you click on that and go down, you can see what I'm talking about. There are probably 19 major stratovolcanoes around the planet erupting at the moment. I think about 7 or 8 have been added to those erupting in the last month. This is interesting because we're seeing activity along the fault lines that I've discussed before that I think were made by massive meteor impacts into Chile and Peru, into Indonesia, and, you know, is it Japan? No, I can't remember where it was now. But anyway, where these things are occurring down in Vanuatu in that area, we think there's evidence of one or two meteors that struck at right angles to each other there a long time ago. I mean, really big ones. And it's on these edges of these where these meteors stopped moving in the surface. You see the ridges pushed up by them, the semicircular signature of these things. And it's along those ridges where you see these earthquakes and you know, the profusion of them. In fact, if we look up at the top row middle earthquakes for the last 7 days, you'll see something else interesting there. Over where Australia is, you look up to the left in Indonesia, and you know, you'll see a ring. It's active. The southwest ring of fire, which goes down to New Guinea and through the island chain that goes back up into toward India. You see a nice tip there that's formed by all these earthquakes in the last 7 days. And if you look over into South America, the junction where that meteor hit between Chile and Peru there, you'll see there were a number of rather interesting quakes there as well. Up in the United States, not big ones, but small ones, which are relatively interesting, because if you look at that image, you'll see that it forms kind of a slightly elliptical outline of the northwest United States, going through Yellowstone up into Mount St. Helens and back down through California down to the tip of the Gulf of California, and then back around and up through to Yellowstone. I don't know whether this is a sign of increasing stress being released. You know how you, if you're bending a piece of rigid plastic, you know, like plexiglass, and you're about to break it, you'll see little tiny small microfractures occurring where it's going to break, you know, like ee type things, until snap, you've broken it. And this is what I'm wondering, if all these little bitty tiny quakes are precursors to a big snap somewhere on that whole section of the northwest United States. Anyway, you can see that in that image. And if you go to the image over, number one, that gives you a closer look at where those earthquakes are occurring in the United States, in the lower 48 anyway. If you look at that, you can see that it goes up through the Rockies, and a little tiny lake there is part of Yellowstone, and back up around and up into Washington State. We see these little quakes all the time, but I'm just seeing more of them, and you know, clustered together in a shorter time frame. So it's something to keep an eye on.
The there's a planetary alignment, from what I believe, or from what I've read, that during the same planetary alignment that happened 10 years ago, or 12 years ago, was the 8 or 9.3 earthquake in Sumatra, I believe, if I read that correctly. Do these planetary alignments, in your with your research, do they have the ability to create the right climate for earthquakes?
Well, the earthquakes build up because of pressures that build up between, you know, opposing fractures, you know, pieces of the mantle that are pressing or sliding against each other or pressing over each other. And these build up until something triggers a release. So it's not the planetary alignment so much that causes, you know, or builds up the energy imbalance. It's when something gravitationally stresses the Earth, moves, you know, bulges it or depresses it, depending upon how you look at it, and you've already got a situation where something's about to snap, it pushes it over the edge. And I think there is truth to that. In fact, I did a study some time back looking at that same program probably that they're talking about, that allows you to spin the solar system around and move the planets to a certain date. And I found that when the major gas giants on Saturn and Jupiter were close to each other, and Venus was on the same side, that we were seeing more large earthquakes at that time. And unless the stresses are such on the surface of the Earth that they're ready to erupt into an earthquake, unless that's there, this will only just cause tidal effects in the land and in the oceans. But if there is a stress there that could be released by the stretching of the surface of the Earth by gravity, then yes, you'll see it happen. And so, as I say, it won't always happen on those alignments, but those are the most likely, because it's lopsided in the solar system, which puts pressure on the sun, which emits more, you know, the solar wind, which impacts our magnetic field, which mechanically puts pressure on our planet. And then you've got the gravitational factors from Jupiter causing all this, and Saturn all being on one side of the sun. RCA did a study of this in the 50s, and they did come up with a positive plot showing that when the gas, Jupiter particularly, was, you know, at 90 degrees ahead of our orbit and Saturn was somewhere else, that they saw more earthquakes occurring. So that tells you that, you know, officially they do look at these kind of things. It's not a conspiracy theory or anything else. It's serious science, and they are coming to conclusions that are fitting with our amateur attempts to, you know, see what alignments cause more quakes. So, yes. Okay, that's a long way to say yes, but that's yes.
Okay. Interesting. Well, and I guess it's something to keep your eye on here in the next few days as this planetary alignment has happened, and we're still on the time frame to watch for these things.
Well, I'm just checking right now. Then I pulled up the program and have dived out into the solar system. This is fun. Okay, at the moment, well, that's interesting. Jupiter and Saturn are about 90 degrees apart, and Earth is ahead of them. So I don't know why that would affect us there. But if that's what we had for that Richter 9 in the Sumatra, where was it?
I think the Indonesia, that's going off somebody else's report. I didn't, that's what I read today in one report. I didn't verify it with a second. But I figured I'd ask you if that's something you've came across.
Well, yeah, I don't know about this particular configuration, but, typically, we do have this alignment I was talking about. I'm looking at Jupiter, and between Jupiter and the Sun is Venus, and then there's Saturn. And I'm just trying to remember. I think Earth has to be behind Venus coming around on the approach when this alignment occurs for the maximum effect, but could be wrong. Yeah, it's a neat program anyway. Solar System Scope, folks, if you want to get it on your computer. Solar System Scope. And it gives you 3D access to the solar system, and it lets you run planets and moons at various speeds, and you can zip it around. We've talked about it before, earlier this year, but it is something that will allow you to see planetary alignments exactly how they would be, except that in one view of this, the way they give you the view, the planets are all, the orbits are exactly, say, the same amount apart. And if you plot it in the way it actually occurs, it's not quite so obvious about the alignments because they're further out. But this, it gives you the option so that you can see what to look for in the real distance map and the real orbit map, which you can switch to on this system. Anyway, that's Solar System Scope. While we're on solar system stuff, there's been such a lot of talk about we didn't go to the moon, and the major reason coming up now is because of the Van Allen radiation belts. You've heard that, yes?
Yeah, and I actually read through the math sheet that was on your website there that talks about this.
So you see, when you do the numbers and you look at the actual plot of the course that Apollo 11 took going to the moon, this guy, there's another paper I haven't even put up yet because it would probably blind most people with the physics and the formulas, but basically this is a man who uses mathematics fluently and is, uses orbital calculations that NASA uses for figuring out where the spacecraft is and where the destination is and what path they need to take to get there. And he's plotted it out showing what Apollo 11 did. And when you look at it in 3D, what they did was they found, as I would suspect, the weakest point of the inner Van Allen belt. It's a little tiny, thin part of it. And you go through there and you change your orbital vector just slightly so you can go through the weakest point of the outer electron zone. The inner zone is a proton zone, as you can see on the side. So when he calculated how many minutes at 25,000 kilometers an hour, whatever, the astronauts were exposed to, whether it was, what kinds of radiation, there are several kinds you can get from there, and how much, in rads they would get going through it at that speed, how many minutes it would be there. And I think it was 58 minutes or something like that. So when you figured it up, don't worry about it, I mean, they figured out the sneaky way to get through it, and yes, they did it. And then you look at the actual Apollo 11 course that we plotted over the top of the ionospheric rings, and you can see how they got through and didn't die. However, the astronauts didn't make a lot of, they didn't make several trips to the moon, the same guy. They would change over the crews, probably giving more people experience, but also probably trying to figure out how to minimize the radiation exposure, which they do get. They do get some going through these weak spots in the ionospheric or the Van Allen belts. Anyway, I thought that was important to put up there for people to do reverence and say, okay, well, yeah, I guess we could have sent astronauts to the moon. It's just another one of those rabbit holes that somebody's put up there to try to say that we didn't go to the moon. There are just so many factors. One guy was saying, well, we didn't go to the moon, and the reason that the other countries didn't, dob us in was because we held some kind of bad report on them or some number of people that would have to be muzzled and have to be careful with everything they said to hide the fact that there was a movie set up and some, you know, orbiting satellite with astronauts out there somewhere that didn't go to the moon. The logistics are just enormous. So, anyway, put that argument to rest, guys.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up, Stan. And, folks, again, go to Stan's website, standao.com. Go to the show images page on the right-hand side of the microphone down on his page on the right-hand side, and you can follow along with what we're talking about. We got Stan for our last segment of the show coming up, and if you want to ask Stan a question, give us a call, 844-769-2944. That's 844-769-2944.
Your chance to talk to Stan Dale. Take it. Take it. Take it.
We'll be right back with Stan. Stay with us. Talking with Stan Deo. Folks, if you want to have, if you have a question for Stan Deo and you would like to talk to him, give us a call at 844-769-2944. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be with Stan taking calls as we cover topics. And Stan, before we go to the calls, I don't know if you want to get into this. There's two things on your show images page that caught my attention, both pertaining to the newest and latest alliances, one between Turkey, Russia, China, and Iran, and then the Islamic military alliance of 34 nations.
Right. Well, what we're seeing is an alliance of the Arab 34 Arab countries and an alliance of the countries that are going to be in the Ezekiel 38 war, you know, the Gog-Magog invasion of Israel. And this is coming together so rapidly that your jaw has to drop. I mean, we're just seeing these nations. I mean, Turkey and Iran, you know, they're shaking hands and we're going to stand together. And you got Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states and Egypt and Libya, a number of them there that are unified into a military consortium of 34 nations. And it's not, you know, like sitting around a table chewing bubble gum or something. These guys are talking about going against ISIS, and of course that would include a dive into Iran. And with that, you'd almost think that the war would be between the Gog Magog people and the Arab consortium there. But it's quite an interesting development. I'm watching it, you know, with bated breath, because it's just.
Well, the 34 nation Arab alliance that involves Saudi Arabia also involves the United States backing and facilitating them. Am I correct in this assessment? As I look at this, you've got, and we covered this at the beginning of the show, you have, you've got NATO, Turkey specifically, you go back to November of last year shooting down a Russian aircraft. Then, of course, the series of events as they unfolded. In response to that, you had the attack at the Istanbul airport. Very interesting timing to that. And usually, ISIS claims responsibility. No one really claimed responsibility. Now we're to the point, if you fast forward to today, you got Erdogan shaking hands with Putin, saying, sorry about that little incident back with the plane, and Turkey switching sides, essentially leaving, at least mentally leaving NATO, siding with Russia, and the United States, and siding with Russia to, and Iran in a way, and to fight ISIS, while the United States is siding with Saudi Arabia and a coalition of Arab nations to fund ISIS. At least this is the way I see it in this murky, through the looking glass area. Is that kind of what you see, or?
Yeah, you know, the United States, I mean, with our base over there in Turkey being surrounded by, and power cut to the base, and surrounded by Turkey's troops, you know, just after or during the coup attempt by the military against Erdogan, that tells you that the United States and Turkey are on the best of terms. And, of course, if you look at all the money coming from Saudi Arabia and other Arab countries, lots of them, into the Democratic campaign money for Hillary and, you know, and Bill, they're coming as a package deal, and the stuff that they're sweet-talking Obama for, tells you that we are aligning ourselves with the Arab nations. Now, I do suspect that the first thing will happen will be the, the first thing we'll see happen is the 34-nation Arab Nation Consortium, plus a few more members that they're trying to get to join. They will get together, and going after terrorism, as they define it, they will probably do the Psalm 83 invasion of Israel. Of course, they'll be defeated horribly with a burning fire, you know, type thing, and whatever that is, whether it's nukes or whatever from Israel or from somebody supporting Israel. I don't know who would do it from the States, because Obama just sold Israel down the river. But anyway, I see that coming first, and then later the Gog Magog thing. What kind of puzzles me is a 7-year period of burning the weapons of war after the invasion in the north of Israel by Gog Magog. If they do that, you'd think it'd be at the beginning of the tribulation period, and either the Arab Consortium has to go before that or after that, somewhere down in the middle of the tribulation period, which I suppose it could do. But, even the great minds over in Israel, you know, the rabbinical colleges and the yeshivim, they have argued back and forth about whether when the Gog Magog invasion is going to take place in Israel. It's kind of a gray area, but something we need to keep watching and expect. Watch both the Arab alliance and watch the Russian, Turkey, Iranian, Iraq type of alignment, which has a lot of terrorism in it. We know that historically that the Saud family of Saudi Arabia have financed bin Laden, or allowed it to be financed, look the other way. In this case, the Saud family may be able to cut the funding to ISIS and the other terrorist groups, like al-Nusra and things like that, and, you know, end terrorism by just saying, stop, guys, we're not paying anymore, and, you know, go home. That would make the Saud family quite the hero in the world if they could back off the Islamic terrorism. There's just a lot of ways it could go, and the good Lord is interesting the way he tells his prophets to write these prophecies for us to interpret as we get closer to the moment, and we're certainly closer to the moment, but I don't know that the picture's any clearer yet. We're working on it.
That's true. It is kind of a murky picture, but it's amazing, Stan, how quickly events have taken place, especially over the last 6 months, a year, but even the last 6 months, how much has changed. And I had said, I was on with Alex Jones today, and we talked just briefly about this, and I just said, you know, it's really all about the petrodollar, taking down the petrodollar. Russia is, we're finding ourselves on the opposite sides of the spectrum with Russia, and of course Russia, they're all about the energy, and so are we, but ours is fragile, the fragility of the petrodollar, which is in the sights of Russia. Russia siding again with Syria, Iran, Turkey, and this power shift, Erdogan cozying up to Putin, which is interesting. Turkey kind of switching sides, if you will. And Putin wants to destroy NATO, I mean, wipe NATO out, which is a defensive mechanism because NATO is putting surrounding Crimea and surrounding surrounding Ukraine, Crimea, with bases and military assets. So I guess it's more of a defensive maneuver by Russia than an offensive maneuver. Yeah, I don't want to glorify Russia or Putin. I'm stating a fact. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it, Stan? I mean, it is
difficult. That's what I'm saying. You know, it's just we're still studying it because. Anyway, it's interesting.
Indeed, it is. Yeah.
We got a number of callers, Stan. If you want to take a few calls.
All right. Now. Sounds like a plan. I suppose we can do that, eh?
All right.
Now somebody's ringing on my phone. I'll be interrupted periodically, I guess. They're trying to call through, but right. Not to worry.
We'll bring on Brian from South Carolina first. Brian, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report with Stan.
Thank you, Joe. Doug, great job today on Alex's show. I got turned on to all you guys by Alex's show. And I'm kind of sorry this is going to be a left turn from what you all were just discussing. But, Stan, I was doing some archive looking into some of David Icke's stuff. And I wanted your opinion on some of the things he has said regarding the moon and Saturn. Not to be vague, but... as far as how that is affecting human behavior?
Oh, I don't know. I got to tell you, I don't hold with much of what David Icke puts forward. It's a bit fantastical, to use that word. you know, I don't go there very often to look for information that I can count on. Let me just put it that way.
10-4. Thank you, sir.
All righty.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
And I'll stand. The moon is out. When the moon comes out, Eric starts scratching his chest and his back, and hair comes out. And Eric the tech. But anyway, he howls, and I don't quite get it. But all right,
we got two Canadian callers. We're going to go to Randy first from Canada. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report with Stan.
Well, hi, Doug, Joe, and Mr. Dale.
Randy, hello.
Hi. I have your second edition, Holly, second edition of Dare to Prepare.
Right.
That's fascinating.
That's an old book.
Yeah. About the moon, about the missions in space.
Right.
I have three things that bother me about going to the moon. Briefly, they never had a landing on Earth of the lunar module that was successful. Neil Armstrong did it once, and he had to eject just before hitting the ground. He almost died doing it. So it was never the successful landing of the lunar module on Earth. When Chernobyl happened, I guess they asked NASA for the astronaut spacesuits, and they said there's no protection, is what I also understand. And then look at the way they acted when they came back. Like Neil Armstrong and that, you never saw them. They never talked hardly at all. They never was out in the public much at all. It was all hush-hush. All of them just were quiet. So, and there's no pictures of stars. I think from NASA, there's no pictures of stars.
Well, the pictures of stars doesn't bother me that much.
On the landing, that's right.
I say the picture of missing the stars doesn't bother me that much because if you're looking at photos versus what your eye can adjust to, because you can adjust the f-stop of your eye just by, you know, willpower. But the cameras that were used, the Hasselblad, they were stopping down. As much of it as could be done was made automatic, and the cameras were covered with the reflective foil to, you know, keep them cool in the lunar temperature. But it was so bright that the thing, the f-stop down, you're like F-22, F-32, would really stop down. And this does give you a depth of field, but it cuts down the minimal starlight that you would see from stars out there because it's like in Photoshop, you move the dark up enough, you know, from the dark grayscale bar enough, the stars disappear in a photo if you look at it today, the one that has stars.
Okay, so
I'm not too worried about that.
Lights don't see the stars, right?
Say again?
The brightness of the city? You can see stars more in the country when it's dark.
Yeah, but the moon, being right on the surface of the moon, it's so white, you know, that it's a lot brighter than starlight or city lights, you know, at night through the haze. I understand what you're saying there, but you've got to create the same kind of situation in your mind and realize that It's so bright without an atmosphere, a normal atmosphere anyway. It's got natrium there, but so bright that, you know, you have to stop down the shutter on your cameras so that you don't overexpose. They're taking the picture for the light of the moon versus the light of the stars, which are dim. And so they've set the parameters in the camera automatically to go to that that side of it. I mean, Hubble telescope gets pictures of stars all over the place.
Yeah. Anything else, Randy, before we let you go?
What's that?
Anything else before we let you go?
Well, I'm just worried about the lunar module landing.
Okay, well, now, on the lunar module landing, the test that he was doing with it, they use the suspension devices to try to keep the effect of gravity to be similar to that on moon. But it, I think that's probably where the problem came in. And, you know, there were, you know, a number of moon landings after that, and, you know, we don't hear of any problems that they had once they were on the actual planet without all the gear hooked up to the lunar module to try to simulate reduced gravity. That would be my first thought on it. I don't know anything else other than that.
Thanks for the call, Randy. We got to move on. We got another caller in Canada, Cece from Canada. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report with Stan.
Joe, good to talk with you gentlemen again. Stan, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. A while back, you were talking to us about rapid continent expansion, that you didn't think that the continents had separated from Pangaea, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Quite as long as modern science is saying, and you gave a really drastically short time. And you used as your evidence the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. At the time I was listening to your talk, I didn't have a notepad handy. I do now. Any chance you could give a small discourse on that again, please?
Well, there's a pretty big discussion that I could give on that, but I'll try to limit it down here. Basically, I'm in the school of amateur geologists that say that the Earth and other planets do expand as they age, and solar systems and galaxies do the same thing. They spread out. And so with the Earth, this expansion is what caused Pangaea to split apart. Well, part of the reason, a large meteor, an asteroid hit, about five of them actually hit during the time that we had Pangaea. And this eventually caused the Earth to expand because it was slowing down from all these impacts and the heat that it dissipated and things like that. So the Mid-Atlantic Ridge was where all of the continents were together in that one landmass. They weren't in the Pacific. That was just a big ocean, probably part of the Tethys Sea that they talk about. And so as the Earth expanded, the major separation was in the where the rivers and things ran through the continents, what are now the continents, ran through the landmass. They were weak, eroded areas in the crust, and that's where they split. And at that weak place, of course, as it starts to spread like in a bubble of soap, you know, soap film in the air, it will expand faster in one side than the other because of heat. And it'll, in essence, in the case of the Earth, it is allowing the magma to come up through thin fissures along the Atlantic Ridge, north and south both. And there were a number of factors that caused this, but the bottom line is that the reason we have that ridge there is that's where the land masses were connected, and that's where the meteors, you know, the Yucatan Peninsula one, the Cotopaxi meteor, the China meteor, a number of these large meteors did hit the Earth within a reasonable distance of each other time-wise, and it just enhanced the rapid split of the continent, and that's, you know, it was what allowed the magma to come up and make that ridge. I guess that's the shortest version I can make of that.
Right. You said something that could have happened like very, very rapidly, I think, a couple of thousand years, as opposed to the millions that they have told us about?
Yeah, the reason is, the other part of the discussion is like the Satterfield papers and various others that are working on it for revised Einstein-type models for the universe. When we have the Big Bang theory, all the mass in the universe, every galaxy, everything, is all down into this very tiny little spot, very out of there, it forms swirls and patterns in the fluid of space, what they call dark matter now. And at that time, you know, within a few seconds, minutes, or whatever, the density starts to drop, but not fast enough. So, well, I mean, not fast anyway. So electromagnetic radiation, light, and various other things that we use to determine the age of rocks and hence the universe, the electromagnetic radiation was going a lot faster because the fluid of space was much more dense. When I say much more, it was like 10 with 60 zeros after it faster, you know, or denser than it is now. And so light traveled that much faster than it does now. We've assumed that the light speed, you know, never changes, but it's constantly decreasing. Now it's very, very small decreases, but it was an exponential curve from the Big Bang till now. And as a result, when you apply that formula of the change in the speed of light and the density of space to the age of the universe, everything comes down to, you know, hundreds of thousands of years or less. We're not talking, you know, billions. And in the case of the Earth, it's, you know, less than 50,000, probably less than 40,000 that we can determine from the magnetic field decay, you know, from the hysteresis point here on the planet. Did I make that clear?
Cool. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right, Brian.
You're welcome.
All right, we're going to go next to Brian in Colorado. You're talking with Stan Dale.
Hey, there, Stan, Brian. This is Brian.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Stan.
Hey, Brian, whereabouts are you?
Northern Colorado, right near the Wyoming border.
Oh, okay. Up near, Cheyenne
American Freedom Network territory.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What's
anyway,
your question,
hey,
Brian?
You know, I had a, your latest chapter in life has been kind of into end times prophecy and stuff, and I've been listening to you and we've been listening to all you guys for many years. Anyway, we had some guests over from church the other day for a barbecue, and Mary had mentioned, you know, that, oh, Brian, you know, Brian, the end time prophecy or something like that. And so obviously I'm put on the spot right then, and my friend's wife, you know, pretty much took over the conversation, thank God, but she was saying basically that her theory was, and I had heard it before, was that, you know, the whole revelations of Daniel and the whole revelation of John was basically something that took place many years ago, or the prophecy, her whole thing was the prophecy had already taken place, and it was like a reference to Nero and all this stuff. And the years I've been listening to everything, and, you know, I had some comebacks and stuff, but her, and I said, so where do you think we're at now? I'm like, there's Christians being beheaded all over the face of the planet. There's obviously a giant battle coming up. And, you know, obviously, it's my friend's wife. I didn't want to get into a heated argument, but I was like, you know, where do you think we are at this point? And she said, we're in the kingdom of God already, the 1,000 years.
Oh,
and
no, no.
Yeah, I swear to God. And excuse my pardon.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, but anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, I was just, you know, I'm a younger guy, so pardon my language, but anyway.
I know how that goes.
You know, it was I really had no comeback, and you know, I was kind of like.
Well, ask her this. There's one thing that you can go at her with if you have to, question wise, not you know, aggro, but ask her, well, why Israel becoming a nation again now was accomplished back in the time of Nero? It didn't.
Right.
And that's. You know, a major timepiece for where we are in prophecy. If you take that out, maybe you can have her argument, but the rebirth of Israel and all the things that have happened and are happening now and the nations forming around Israel to invade, all these things have never happened before.
And yeah.
You can put that back in the argument.
One of my arguments was that, you know, they're saying that there will be you know, earthquakes in far off places and distant places where, and pestilence, and, you know, and I was saying, you know, there was no way back then to know if there was earthquakes in far off distant lands, and And I was just saying, you know, basically our argument came down to, you know, I was like, you kind of have to really take the, you have to take that leap of faith and take the Bible in reality, you know, and for literal. And, cause she was just, she kept going on and on about how, you know, those were basically, I was misinterpreting it because it was written to the Jewish people and I'm not a Jew, so I don't really know the Book of Revelations, how it was supposed to be interpreted and all that. And so I'll hang up. But I would just like, you know, if that argument ever comes up again, and the Lord knows I spend a lot of time listening to, you know, Pastor Billy Crone, you, Joe and Doug, and all, you know, all of us. American Freedom Network has a very open forum here with people from all different backgrounds, and so I figured myself pretty versed. But when I heard her say that we were living in the kingdom of God and that Revelations has already passed, I was just like so taken back. I had really no rebuttal.
Well, I've heard the argument before. I forget what the official name of it is, but you might look at get online and look up the Kingdom of God version of the Book of Revelation. And it might give you some pointers one way or the other. I just typed in King of God Version Revelation, and yeah, there's a lot of references in there. Bible Hub, Enter the Bible. And you might just thumb through there and see if there are some rebuttals to that viewpoint.
Excellent. Thanks for the call, Brian. Stan, we got one more caller. Dwayne in Texas, we only got about a minute and a half.
All right, Dwayne.
Go ahead.
Yes, have you all heard about Hillary, her June 7th speech? In it, if you haven't, then I'll tell you, in the speech she states, she goes on and on about the glass ceiling, and on and on and on and on. Then she says, there's a glass ceiling over us, and you may not be able to see it right now, but don't worry. We won't be breaking this one. Basically, you understand what she's saying. She's not going to be president. She has no intention of being president. So if you haven't seen that June 7th video,
if she has no intention, Brian, Dwayne, what's she up to?
She is, what she's doing is she's double teaming Trump. And she takes all the hits that Bernie doesn't have to take. See, and then when Bernie gets in there, he's just like, well, I don't know what you crazy guys have been arguing about, but I haven't been playing dirty politics. I'm a saint.
You're saying she's going to step down and Bernie Sanders will take her place?
Well, that's what I've been saying for quite a long time now. But then, of course, Alex came out the other day, but here's the thing. Yeah, I'm saying they're double teaming Alex on purpose. In fact, I'll bet you that she showed him a picture of some type of tumor or something. But anyway, beyond that, it really caught my attention when there was 96 days between June 7th and September 11th. 96 is not an occult number, but 32 and 64 are. And so, for weeks up until August 10th, for about 2 weeks before August 10th, I was predicting that the narrative would come out, the Hillary assassination narrative would come out. And in fact, Trump talked about the Second Amendment on the 9th, and then on the 10th, 64 days later from June 7th. And that's the very first network news, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN or Fox News. If you do a Google search for June 9th, they didn't touch it with a 10-foot pole until the 10th, even though he spoke about it in the evening. So I was exactly correct in predicting the assassination narrative would come out exactly on the 10th.
Sorry to cut you off there, Dwayne. We did get what you're saying, but we are out of time. Stan, want to thank you for coming on next week.
All right.
Holly.
All right, thank you, guys.
And you'll be following Holly.
Yeah. All right, next week after Holly.
All right, thanks, Dan. God bless. Have a great night.
Lord bless you now. Night, night.
All right. Always a crowd pleaser when Stan Dale comes on next week, as you said, Joe. Holly first, or well, hour before Stan, Holly Dale talking about her new book, and then don't forget to catch her on Coast to Coast AM tonight, and then next week, the third hour, second hour, Holly Dale, third hour, Stan Dale. It's gonna be a double team, double header next week. God bless each and every one of you. Join us back here tomorrow for the Hagman and Hagman Report.